Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us, a personal finance show on money, how it works, how to invest it, how to live without worrying about it. I'm your host, David Stein, and today is episode 117. It's titled The Retirement Journey. A few weeks ago, after attending a wedding in Twin Falls, Idaho, LePro and I were checking into the hotel, and I noticed a bicycle in the rack outside the door. What piqued my interest was the rider had left his or her mini air pump attached to the bike, free for anyone to steal. I thought that's really trusting. Now, this road bike was a Jamis Satellite steel frame. It was outfitted with a Classics Brooks B17 brown leather saddle. That's the bike seat that Brooks has been making for over 100 years, and it's the exact seat I would read about in Bicycle magazine growing up, and I lusted after as a teenager, but I couldn't afford. I thought it would make me ride faster. This bike could have come right out of the 1970s or 80s. It was a classic. The next morning, I was sitting in the hotel lobby trying to get some Wi-Fi. This has had to be the worst Wi-Fi, in-room Wi-Fi that I've had in years. And the lobby even wasn't that great. So while I was down there working, the bike's owners came down to use the computer and prepare for his day's journey. We got to talking. His name was Oluteo Ayodeji. He is riding across the country. He started in Olympia, Washington at the beginning of July, and he's heading to the Virginia coast as a memorial to his 16-year-old son, Sule, who took his own life a year ago. Oluteo told me how he knew nothing about depression when the school nurse called him several years back to say his son had broken down and was in her office. They worked with psychologists to try to find the right mix of counseling and medicine to manage the illness. Things seemed to be improving. Oluteo told me how Sule had just gotten a job at Chipotle. He was preparing to attend the University of Maryland. He and his dad were planning a cross-country bicycle trip for the summer. Sule graduated from high school. According to Oluteo's GoFundMe profile, Sule said he wanted to travel the country, going from town to town and meet new people. But the day came when Sule didn't show up for work. His sister and dad couldn't find him. Sule was really close to his sister, and they were panicked. They couldn't find him anywhere. Oluteo said the last time he had saw his son was earlier that day, when his boy asked to borrow his cell phone. They later found a note. 1 year later, Oluteo is taking the bike trip that he and his sons were planning. His son was planning. He bought that Jamis bicycle used at a swap meet for only $400. This is a low-budget adventure. There's no fancy gear. There's no shuttle to follow him in case his bike breaks down. Oluteo writes to Sule, "I will meet those people for him, and I will tell them how intelligent, artistic, and insightful Sule was. This cross-country ride was intended for my buddy and I to see and explore the country together. So as I ride, I will carry Sule with me. I will deposit some of his ashes in the rivers I cross. The rivers will carry him to parts of the world he will not consciously explore, and he will forever be part of the ecosystem." Oluteo also rides for the other teens who lost their lives to suicide, for their parents, and for the parents of teenagers who currently suffer depression. As he travels, Oluteo tries to spread awareness of teen depression. Finally, Oluteo says he rides for himself. Quote, "I'm not riding for closure because there will be none. There will always be an opening in my heart where my son should be. If nothing else, I hope that this ride will provide me with the strength to carry on. As in life, I know my journey will be long and challenging. Along the way, I will face challenges and obstacles. I know there will be times when I want to give up, but I will forge ahead because my Sule and others could not. I will ride. In Oleteo's most recent Facebook post, he was in Kremlin, Colorado, elevation 7313. He's just about a third of the way across the country. In that post, he wrote, "We're making progress today, despite the headwinds." Oleteo mentioned to me when he was in Idaho that he was still waiting for the tailwinds everyone said he would have if he rode from west to east. Apparently, he's still waiting. No tailwinds. What inspires me about Oluteo's 3,000-mile journey is his willingness to undertake it on a used road bike with faulty rims that have plagued him for much of the trip. Cycling just isn't much fun on wobbly wheels. Most cyclists on such a long ride cruise along on rims that cost 2 to 3 times what Oluteo paid for his entire bike. Now, I gave Oluteo at the time $20, and I told him to go have lunch. And I've since gone to his GoFundMe profile to help sponsor him. And I'll link to that in the show notes as well as his Facebook page if you want to help support him on this memorable ride. But most of us don't have the desire or ambition to attempt a cross-country cycling trip. Yet there comes a day when we launch ourselves on a journey that can seem equally as perilous, where the unknowns are just as great, and where we worry about our level of preparedness. It's called retirement. Some retirees begin their journey with 7-figure investment portfolio balances and lucrative pension plans. These are the retirees who cruise through their retirement on the equivalent of $5,000 custom road bikes with titanium frames and carbon forks. Most retirees, though, get by on much less. The equivalent of Oluteo's used JMS steel frame bike with wheels that won't stay true. According to the 2015 Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies, the median retirement savings for a retiree at the time of retirement is only $131,000. For couples, the median retirement savings balance at the time of retirement is $250,000. If the average retired couple withdrew 4% of their starting $250,000 balance to live on in their first year of retirement, that's $12,500. And then if you tack on what the average U.S. retired couple receives in Social Security benefits, $26,544, combined, what there's take out of the portfolio, plus Social Security, you get $39,000 per year for living expenses. Now, the 2014 Consumer Expenditure Survey, this is a survey done every couple years by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They show the average retired household spends $42,715 per year. That includes $15,000 a year on housing-related costs, $6,800 on transportation, including $1,700 on gasoline, $6,000 on healthcare cost, $5,400 on food, including $136 on sugars and sweets, $2,500 on charity, $2,300 on entertainment, including $440 on pets, and $4,700 on everything else. And that's including $158 on postage and stationery. I'll link to in the show notes the summary of that so you can take a look at that. It also has other categories. And or if you're a member of my Insider's Guide, I will already have sent you those links along with a summary article of this week's episode. And you can sign up for the free Insider's Guide by going to moneyfortherestofus.net, or if you're a US-based listener, just text the word insider to the number 44222. So that's what they spend, $42,715, the average retiree. And the average retiree income, including Social Security, investment earnings, and wages, is around $39,500 per year based on that same study. Now, how does the average retired couple bridge the gap between what they spend annually and their Social Security benefits and investment earnings? Well, I just gave you the answer. They work. The average retiree household earns $7,700 annually from employment. Work on at least a part-time basis is how retirees, particularly in today's world, will be able to afford retirement. According to the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies, 58% of workers expect to retire after age 65, and 51% of workers plan to continue working in retirement. Let me tell you about another retiree. His name is Bill Bengen. He was born in Brooklyn in 1947. He graduated from MIT in the late 1960s with a BS in aeronautics and astronautics. He was a rocket scientist. He co-authored a book that was published by MIT in 1973. It was titled Topics in Advanced Model Rocketry. He wanted to work for NASA, but saw funding was being cut, so he joined his family's soft drink bottling franchise in the New York metropolitan area, and he worked there for 17 years. He was the chief operating officer when they sold the business in 1987. Then Bill moved to Southern California, and he became a financial planner. He earned a master's in financial planning in 1993, and so he worked for about two decades as a financial planner and then sold his firm and retired in 2013. And now he's become one of the world's foremost authorities in collectors of non-sports cards. So non-sports card playing cards, think superheroes, historical figures. There's an article on Bill where he mentions his favorite cards. He says, I would have to say one of my favorites is the 1956 Davy Crockett Orange Series, which I've never heard of, is the number one King of the Wild Frontier card. It has a great shot of Fess Parker leaning against a tree with Old Betsy. Is that the horse? Old Betsy. Not. I don't know much about Davy Crockett. We're going to go. I think Betsy's the horse. To me, that is the essence of Davy Crockett. I bet that's his gun, Old Betsy, probably the gun. That series was an important part of my life when I was a kid, so that is certainly at the top for me. Now, I mentioned Bill Bengen because of his financial planning work. In 1994, in the Journal of Financial Planning, October, he wrote the definitive article where he introduced the subject of spending rates from retirement plans, your retirement nest egg, and sequence of return risk. The article was titled Determining Withdrawal Rates Using Historical Data. And what he did is he took 30-year rolling historical periods. He was the first one that did this. And then he calculated a maximum sustainable withdrawal rate. What's the maximum rate that you could spend and not run out of money? And over that 30, and he did rolling 30-year periods. And so he was calculating what he called the safe max, S-A-F-E-M-A-X, which is simply, it's the highest sustainable withdrawal rate for the worst case retirement scenario in the historical period. So the worst, every year you retire, let's say you retire this year, you assume 30 years, the return is not, as we know, it's not going to be the same every year. Sometimes your market might fall dramatically, it might start out really well, and your retirement experience in terms of your spending will very much be influenced by the returns from year to year and how they vary. So the safe max assumes a 50% allocation to stocks, 50% to bonds, and it's the starting spending rate. And so by safe max, what is the spending rate the first year? What's that dollar amount? And then you adjust the dollar amount each year by the rate of inflation. And so in his analysis, he came up with 4.15% for U.S.-based investors. That was the safe max, the most that could be spent and still have survived retirement with the worst 30-year period's worth of returns. And those would have been retirees that retired in 1966. Let me pause here to share some words from this week's sponsors. We have a brand new sponsor to our show. It's Yahoo Finance. Yahoo's been around for decades. My first email outside of work was a Yahoo email address. But the financial side, I've used on occasion primarily to get data for dividend histories for particular funds or ETFs. But I was pleasantly surprised to get back on Yahoo Finance to see how it's evolved over the years. Now it's really a financial dashboard where you can get an understanding of what's going on with the markets. There are relevant articles from Bloomberg, Reuters, the Associated Press, and the Yahoo Finance team. You can look at the economic events calendar and see which data series are being released that day and what the consensus is. You can see the pulse of the markets at any time by going to Yahoo Finance. In addition, you could see all of your investments and retirement accounts in one place with Yahoo Finance. You get a consolidated view of multiple accounts. Yahoo Finance serves as a financial hub for your retirement accounts, but also comprehensive financial news and analysis. You need to check out Yahoo Finance, particularly if you haven't been there in a while. Check it out at yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. If you've been using Mint to manage your finances, you know they shut down several months ago. Well, let me tell you about the budgeting solution, the financial tracking solution I've been using for the past number of months. It's Monarch Money. Monarch Money is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets like I've done. You can set goals, collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. What I like about Monarch is the ability to customize what I want to see. I have custom budget categories, and then I can go on to the dashboard and see where I'm above trend on some of my spending. I especially like that Monarch will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. That's monarchmoney.com/David for your extended 30-day free trial. Now, one of the Money for the Rest of the Hub members and listener to the show, Josh Carlton, sent me a really fascinating article by Wade Phaw, P-H-A-U. And he updated a study he did a number of years ago on the using this safe withdrawal rate, the safe max, the maximum sustainable withdrawal rate, but he updated from data from 1900 through 2015. And more importantly, he did it for different countries. The original study by Bill Bengen was only for U.S.-based investors. But just like with the show, we have investors all over the world. What is the maximum sustainable withdrawal rate if you're based in Japan or in Australia? Well, he did that analysis. Again, he used 50% stocks, 50% bonds. And what he found is in the U.S., the safe max, the maximum withdrawal is 3.94% in order to never run out of money. If you spent 4%, a little more than that, 2.3% of the time there was a failure over a 30-year period of time. That's not too bad. 39% of the time, retirees would have run out of money if they had spent 5% in the first year. Calculate the dollar amount and, again, adjust for inflation. Obviously, in the later years, if you're doing that calculation and you're adjusting the dollar amount by the rate of inflation, let's say 10 years in retirement, your spending rate is going to be much higher than 4 or 5% as a percent of your remaining nest egg. But when we talk about spending rates, we're talking about what is the first year spending rate. So Canada was a little better, about 3.96%. But here's what's astounding. He did the analysis, the same analysis for 22 countries. Half of them had a safe max or a sustainable spending rate of less than 3%. If you lived in Japan, 0.3% was the maximum sustainable withdrawal rate. 36% of the time, at a 4% spending rate, retirees would have run out of money. 43% of the time with 5% rate. The worst country at all, even worse than Japan, was Austria. But back in episode 85, we did an episode called Are You Home Country Biased? And we talked about why you shouldn't have all your investments in one country. So it should be diversified globally. So what if you were? What if you invested in a world portfolio, such as the MSCI All Country World Index? So you had 50% there, 50% in bonds. What is the maximum sustainable withdrawal rate? 3.45%, according to this study by Wade Faw. And again, I'll link to it in the show notes, and you can look at the table for all the countries. So if you're in the world portfolio, so all, both U.S. and non-U.S., 3.45% sustainable spending rate in the first year of retirement. If you spent 4%, 15% of the time, you would have run out of money during retirement. And if you spend 5%, 56% of the time, you would have run out of money. If we exclude the U.S. and just invest outside the U.S. and don't invest in the U.S. at all, the maximum sustainable withdrawal rate is 3%. Okay, I stopped recording because I just couldn't stand it. I had to see what old Betsy was. It's the rifle, and I should have known that. It's a little embarrassing. One advantage of a solo show, you can stop, take a break, and then begin recording again. So what's our takeaway from these spending rates? One, I mean, just essentially, as retirees, we're not going to necessarily be able to start out at a 4% spending rate, especially if you run a diversified portfolio. On the Money for the Rest of Us Hub, there's some model portfolios out there, and the returns are sort of 5 to 6%. If you run a globally diversified portfolio with the way the determinant of your sequence of return risk are the starting conditions. And starting conditions are not terribly attractive to suggest 4% type spending rate is sustainable. I got an email this week from Steve, a listener, and he says, so you've probably addressed it, but I forget. How can we retirees buy bonds knowing bonds become more valuable when interest rates go lower, but that rates are at or near zero? And then the corollary question is, how can we retirees buy stocks when they appear to be overpriced and even in good times are volatile? That's a tough choice. Bonds, the best estimate of a future return on an annualized basis over a 7 to 10 years for bonds is the current yield to maturity. So for global bonds, that's less than 2%. For stocks, we've talked about the driver of returns for stocks. It's the starting conditions. It's the dividend yield. It's an estimate for what earnings growth will be, which generally is influenced over the long term by the growth of the economy. And then we need to look at what are valuations. When valuations are very, very high, then we need to have lower expectations for stocks, because there's a chance that they're going to be repriced in 10 to 15 years from now. And you combine that all together, we're sort of, I think, a reasonable return assumption for a public portfolio is 5 to 6%. If you're a more aggressive investor, maybe it's 6.5%. But that's about it. And so choices are perhaps do more on the private side. Perhaps you have rental real estate. I was talking to a gentleman the other day, and we were talking about rental real estate. One advantage of very, very low interest rates is the ability to lock in a 30-year mortgage on a rental real estate property, and then you're paying back that mortgage with inflation-adjusted dollars. Ideally, you can raise rents if inflation goes up, and that can generate a return well above 6%, hopefully double-digit type return. That can certainly help, but it takes work to build out a portfolio. But that's one option. It's been 4 years since I, quote-unquote, said I retired and quit my job. And what have I learned in 4 years is you just have to take it year by year. We can't fathom a 20-year, 30-year, 40-year retirement. It's very, very difficult. And so one benefit of having an income, which I now have, I did not have when I first retired, but I've worked, I've launched the podcast, launched the hub, doing other things, just because it puts less stress on my retirement portfolio. I don't have to worry so much about generating the return. I still work hard at it, but it's less stress. And most investors are going to have to, or retirees are going to have to work some in retirement simply for peace of mind, because it's just less stressful knowing there is some income coming in. And then you have to take it year by year. You just have to, we're worried about sequence of returns risk. So we have to see what were the returns this year? What were the conditions? And perhaps adjust our spending based on how it's going in terms of retirement. It's certainly something that we're looking to do as we budget in my family, and most investors will need to do. And we have to maintain our health. I saw a study recently in Nautilus magazine, and I'll link to it. I don't have it right in front of me, but it talked about how life expectancies are increasing. But they broke it down in an interesting way, because they talked about it's not enough for your life expectancy to increase, but the issue is how much of that increase are you healthy and not suffering from a debilitating illness or malady. And I believe the statistic was typically the last 8 to 9 years of someone's life, they're sick in some form. Hopefully they're getting by, but it's not easy. And so we have to kind of factor in the added health cost as we get older and make decisions now when we're in our 30s or 40s or 50s. Try to put those habits in place so that we can be more healthy, be more mobile, and able to work in the early years of our retirement age so that it's just less stressful. That's our episode for the day. Shorter episode, and another advantage of having your own solo show is you can adjust the time. When you run out of stuff to say, you stop talking and stop recording. Show notes, again, are at moneyfortherestofus.net. If you would like some additional help as you prepare for retirement, if you are retired in terms of overseeing your investments, you can get that at the moneyfortherestofushub.com. That's a premium membership site we've been running for just over 18 months. It's the tools I use to manage my own retirement portfolio. We have over 400 members that do the same thing, either asset allocation tools, model portfolios, getting their questions answered in the forum or in the weekly Money for the Rest of Us Plus episode. One of the new things that will be added this week, based on feedback from Hub members, many who are retired or contemplating retirement or preparing for retirement, is how do I manage in terms of I got a tax-deferred account, I have my spouse's tax-deferred account, we have taxable accounts, we have other accounts. Do we have the same holdings in every account? Or do we split them up somehow? And there's not a right answer to that. So we're putting together a framework that'll be released this week. What are some of the considerations for deciding that? So that's an implementation issue and just one of the many topics we cover on the Money for the Rest of Us Hub. And you can get more information for that at moneyfortherestofushub.com. Everything I've shared with you in this episode has been for general education only. I've not considered your specific risk profile. I've not provided investment advice, simply general education on money, investing in the economy. Have a great week.